Hello, this is Terrence McNally. This week, the media is full of Academy Award buzz, as well as the horrors of Israel's response to the horrors of October's attack by Hamas. Here's my 2013 conversation with Palestinian Emad Bernat and Israeli Guy Davidi, co-directors of the Oscar-nominated documentary Five Broken Cameras. And as we track the destruction of each of his cameras, we witness a son grow from a newborn to a young boy, while the village's ancient olive trees are bulldozed and protests intensify. Hello, I'm Terrence McNally, and welcome to Free Forum. The Academy Awards will be given out in 2 weeks, and we're lucky to have the co-directors of one of the nominated films with us today. Five Broken Cameras, one of five nominees for Best Documentary, tells the story of a Palestinian farmer who lives with his wife and four small children in the village of Bilin in the central West Bank. Emad Bernat got his first camera in 2005 when his youngest son, Gabriel, was born. Almost simultaneously, the Israeli army began building a separation wall between Bilin and a nearby Israeli settlement, separating residents from the olive tree groves that are their livelihood. Bernat turned his camera on his fellow villagers as they responded with nonviolent protests, including marches to the wall every Friday. And I'm joined in the studio today by Bernat and his Israeli co-director, Guy Davidi. Structured in chapters around the destruction of each one of Bernat's cameras, we witness Gabriel grow from a newborn baby into a young boy, as from behind the lens, Bernat watches as olive trees are bulldozed and protests intensify in this cinematic diary of life in the West Bank. Upon hearing of the Oscar nomination for their film, Bernat stated, "The truth is powerful. It can heal. I hope this film can help heal misunderstanding about us. A filmmaker's dream is winning an Oscar. However, my dream is freedom for Palestine. We all have lots of work to do." And the words of co-director Guy Davidi, "I am hopeful this will be a milestone on the road to ending the occupation and securing a brighter and more just future for Palestinians and Israelis." Here on Free Forum, we explore the lives, the work, and the ideas of individuals that I suspect have pieces of the puzzle of a world that just might work. We look at new, innovative and provocative approaches to business, environment, health, science, politics, media, culture, all based on the fact that I believe we can do better, and I want to find out how. Emad Bernat is a Palestinian farmer, photographer, and filmmaker. Guy Davidi is a documentary filmmaker and cinema teacher born in Jaffa, Israel. He's been directing, editing, and shooting films since the age of 16. As a cameraman, he shot the films Hamza and Journal d'une Orange for France 3. He also directed many short documentaries presented in film festivals and venues worldwide. In 2010, his first feature film, Interrupted Streams, premiered to great acclaim at the Jerusalem International Film Festival. Welcome to both of you to Pacifica and Free Forum. I like listeners to get a feel for the people behind the work and the ideas that we talk about. So first Guy, and then Emad. Expand on your bios a bit. Tell us a bit about your path to the work that you're doing today. Not maybe even just specifically this film, so we get a feel for you. Feel free to mention mentors, turning points, moments of decisions along that path.
Okay. So I was raised in a city close to Tel Aviv. And from a very early age, I knew I wanted to tell stories. At the age of 14, I started to write a novel. And at the age of 16, I made my first film. It was a video clip for Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles.
Excellent.
And I think one of the moments that influenced me the most to do films, where I decided I really want to do films in my life, was I studied cinema in high school. And the teacher took us to see Woman Under Influence by John Cassavetes. And I saw that film and was so impressive. I was so impressed by Gina Rowlands and by the film and the quality of the film. And I think that moment I understood there is something to do with films.
For me, Faces, his film Faces was the one that just changed things.
Later
for me.
On, I all of the films, yeah. Opening Night and Gloria, and so much great. For me, is the most interesting, innovative filmmaker, and also his life is inspiration and what he was facing to. And a lot of, at the end, a lot of people that are not respected, at least here in the U.S., of his work so much. It took him a lifetime to achieve this, the acclaim that he got. That it was easier for him to get it in Europe, but less in the U.S.
True.
So it's also kind of a very sad story, but it's a very story of an artist that is a real fighter, and I was really inspired by his work. So then I started doing films when I was already in high school, but originally I wanted to do fiction films, and I was writing a lot of stories, and I found out that I was starting to show more interest in what's happening in Palestine and West Bank, but without any knowledge. I'm not coming from a politicized family, so I don't come from that kind of background, but anyway, when I was supposed to go do my military service at the age of 18, I was enrolled in the military, but then after a few months, I started to find my way out from the military because I found that system very oppressive to me as a soldier, without knowing anything what the army is actually doing in the West Bank, because not all soldiers are necessarily sent to deal with civilians or to be in combat units or... but I found out that this is a corrupted system, a very violent, that teaches you, try to break you as a human being, to break your values in order to be a good soldier. So I started finding my way out of that system, which is a very difficult thing to do in Israel. It's which, you know, we have to do 3 years of military service, and refusing doing that I needed to confront my family, my friends, all the people around me, and it's a big... I think after doing this kind of revolt, I was much more free than to do things like going to villages in Palestine, because I was already confronting everyone around me.
Just if I may, that's the voice of Guy Davidi, one of the co-directors of Five Broken Cameras, nominated for the Best Documentary Academy Award. Just again... for people to learn about this, how did you eventually get out? I mean, we've all heard of the mandatory military service. How did you get out?
You have a few ways to get out. It's very difficult. I use the mental reason, meaning I try to convince the military that I don't fit mentally to serve in the military. And it's a very difficult thing to do, because you have to have a strong support of your family to do that.
Ah.
And I didn't have that support. So you have to really push in all directions over your family to put a lot of pressure to actually get released. And the army doesn't give up on you. It's not that you go and you say, well, I'm depressed, I want to commit suicide or something, and you're released. You have to really show, really to prove that you're in a tough mental position. And the parents have to fight for you as well, because if the parents won't fight for you to get released, then the army is safe. So if you commit suicide, for instance, they're on the safe side.
Ah, right. No, yes, there is no record of the family saying, yes, yeah. I understand.
So so you have actually to put a lot of pressure on people around you. And so it took me almost 4 months to get out of the military. And finally I did. And I think this was the most important decision of my life after choosing film.
And this is done quite a young age.
18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I discovered that 2 days ago. It was 15 years exactly to the day I was enrolled. So, in this time, 15 years ago, I was in the rain, in a tent, holding a gun and starting my enrollment in the military service, yeah. I think the fact that I knew I wanted to do films helped me out, because I knew I have kind of a target in my life and there is something I want to do, and I don't need to waste my time around, you know, because you pay a big price for not doing military. And you cannot work in many kinds of jobs. So I wasn't afraid of that, because I knew already I'm going to do films. And I was, immediately after I was released, I was starting to find my way in to do films by myself. I was actually a cinema teacher in high schools. I think I was the youngest cinema teacher in the country. Sometimes the security guys in the school, they didn't let me into the schools because they thought I'm a student, trying to sneak in or... And I think I'm a cinema teacher ever since. And at the age, and after spending some time abroad, I lived in Paris. I moved to Paris because I felt there's no way for me to do films in this country. It's too oppressive. It's too tough for people who are true artists. And it's a very, even to study cinema in university was for me a very tough experience because I felt university, the film school in the university was for me the same as the military. The teachers are oppressive. Everyone is kind of putting a lot of pressure on you. You have to fit in, and it's not me. So I left the country. I lived in Paris, and I think living in Paris kind of opened. I felt much more free to meet different kind of people, to speak out, to have kind of a more free life. And when I decided to come back to Israel to live, I knew already that I want to go to the West Bank because I felt if I'm coming back to this place, I want to be much more open than the normal Israelis who live in a kind of a ghetto. You know, we built a separation fence, but it's not just for Palestinians. It's also to be away from the Middle East, to create our own little Jewish ghetto. And I wanted to break this ghetto when I come back. So the first thing I've done once I came back to Israel was to go to the villages of the West Bank together with Israeli activists that were going to support Palestinians in their struggle. And I came to support, but also to learn, because I didn't know anything besides some stories that I've heard and a lot of, you know, miscorrect narrative, the Israeli narrative that is a very, very manipulated and a very, you know, it's our narrative is not the reality, is not an objective narrative. We have to listen to Palestinians to hear how they experience the time. So it was very important for me to discover, to meet people and to be inspired.
And what year is that?
That was 2003.
Okay, so a couple of years before you meet Iman.
2003, 2004, I had a good Palestinian friend we had good connections with, and he actually lived in my place in Tel Aviv, and which was illegal, and he once got arrested. So we had a lot of story and connections. And when the movement reached to Berlin in 2005, you know, the movement against the nonviolent movement started from north to south because it was the way the separation fence was built.
Ah.
So whenever a village was affected by the construction of the separation fence that was built further along the green line, confiscating agricultural lands and sometimes entering into the villages, cutting villages one from another, cutting villages from the cities and doing a lot of crazy stuff, all just to be able to grab more land and to create new facts on the ground. So the villagers naturally started to demonstrate using this nonviolent ideas and direct actions. And many times they were inviting Israeli activists and international activists to join in. So with that movement, I joined in. And as I'm doing films and I'm teaching cinema, I started teaching activists how to use their cameras and how to film. And I was I was doing that for a while. And when the movement reached to Berlin, which is... Berlin is a few miles from Ramallah, and it's a few miles from the Green Line, and more than 50% of their agricultural land was grabbed. So I joined the village, and I met Imad quite early. He was he's a very important figure for the movement. He's you know, us, the filmmakers and the cameramen, we were coming, we're passing a few days, the demonstration, going back, and he was there doing this important work, filming whatever things were, you know, whenever everyone else went away and the soldiers coming at night. So he was there to catch that. And so I think it was every one of us, the activists, knew him. It was an important thing to have someone like that. And that's how I remembered him always. Also, I remembered he lost cameras and videotapes. So we, you know, a lot of people helped him because it was important. What he was doing was very important, not just for himself, for a lot of other people and for the movement.
Okay, I'm going to let you stop there. I'm Terrence McNally, and that was the voice of Guy Dividi. He is one of the co-directors. I'm also joined in the studio by Imad Bernat, and they are the co-directors of the Academy Award-nominated documentary, Five Broken Cameras. To learn more, you can go to Kino Lorber, K-I-N-O-L-O-R-B-E-R, K-I-N-O-L-O-R-B-E-R, KinoLorber.com/Five Broken Cameras. That's the production company. The film is available on DVD, Netflix, iTunes, Hulu, Amazon, and Video On Demand. This is Freeform. You can visit me at TerrenceMcNally.net, TerrenceMcNally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com. They're the same website, and you can learn more there about the show, guests, podcasts, transcripts, and so on. You can listen to podcasts there or at iTunes. You can sign up there or at iTunes to have it delivered to you weekly. You can also sign up there or by emailing me at TEMcNally, TEMCNALLY, at Mac.com, TEMcNally at Mac.com. And there you can get a weekly email telling you who's going to be on, what we're going to talk about, and three or four articles about the issues. You can also check out Free Forum with Terrence McNally on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at McNally Terrence. I'm now going to turn to Imad. Also, your path to the work you find yourself doing today, just not so much this film, but just how your life led you to what you're up to today.
Yeah, as you know, I live in the West Bank, and I all my life since I was childhood, I live in my village. It's a small village, about 1,900 people now.
Oh, that's
1,900 people now. But before, I remember before, I'm 41 years old, and when I was child, I remember that the village was maybe 800 people, and so every year you see the people, the village is growing up and more people. So since our childhood, I remember the life in the village, and it's not easy to live there under army control, under the occupation. You feel that you don't have roads, everything is broken, and you don't have electricity, you don't have water. So many kind of things to talk about, and it's not easy. And just after 12 years to go in my age, after 12 years to see the sea, it was surprise just to see the sea after 12 years.
So the first time in your life you see the sea. How far are you from the sea?
I'm far, about 40 minutes from the sea.
40
but
minutes.
I have no access to the sea. So first time I went to the sea, I was 12 years old, and for me it was surprise to see the sea.
Yes, I'm going to
Tel Aviv, and to see how the people live there, the roads, and they have everything. And you come back to the village, you have nothing, and you live in under many pressures, the army pressures. You face the soldiers. The soldiers meet you around the house or in the street, and they ask you for ID, or they try to arrest you. So I came through a very hard experience through all my life, and so that's how we live in Palestine everywhere, and how our kids grow up. So I wanted to change this and to make change, to affect the situation by using my camera and making films.
So let me come into this for a second. So just to establish more life before this film, you and your family have lived in that village for years, for generations?
Yeah, I lived there. I was born there in the village, and my father, my grandfather, and for many generations in the same place.
And how your family has made its living over the years?
They were in the past, before 40 years, they were working on the land in the
olive groves,
agriculture, or olives oil, or so. It was very simple, their life. It was no much expenses to pay. They just go to work to the land, and they get their food, and they have their chicken or their animals.
Goat.
And they live very, very simple. So, but the life now is very difficult, because there's many pressures and many expenses you have to pay. So since I was childhood, I remember how's the village and how's the mountain around the village and how the valley and the beautiful scenes in around the village. And just to go out of the village, to go to the mountain or to the valley, and it's you relax and you feel yourself in paradise. Year after year, and it's became more hard and more worse the situation. You see, just everything is disappeared. All the beautiful scenes, all the mountains, all the trees, it's disappearing year after year, and it's very hard to see that. And you just see a building, very big building, replacing on these mountains.
The settlements.
Yeah, the settlements, the Israeli settlements.
Yes, for anyone, and let me cut in for a second. I'll get right back to you, Ahmad. For anyone who doesn't know, because for me, I've read about the situation for years. I've never been, but I've read. For me to see your villages and then the settlements, which are basically large apartment houses. When I think of settlements, I thought they might have been individual houses. But what I see near your village is suddenly a large apartment complex appears.
Yeah, there's many kind of settlements. There's settlements, big buildings, and there's some settlements, small houses. So it's different. So you see how the settlements is getting close and close every year to the village and to the mountain, to globe more land and to globe the life of the people there. So.
Okay, let me ask you, so that's your family's life. You're watching this transition. At the time that you buy your first video camera, you are living as your father did and as the rest of your family did, as a farmer?
When I was living with my family, so I was always, I was watching films. I like to watch films, especially fiction films, and I know just to watch the film and to see people in reality, it's different experience. So I was connected to this since I was childhood, and I was I liked to the cameras, and so when I was child, I was asking people who come from outside, from Europe or from America, that there's many Palestinians who live in United States and they have families. So I was asking them for maybe to have a camera or to get their camera to make some shots. So I was connected to the camera since I was a child. And when the situation get to my village, the construction, the wall, so I decided to be part of this and to with my camera to be one of the people in the village, because it's my life and it's my place. So I was doing this for different purposes. And
so you could see this was a role for you.
Yeah, so it's for me is I know that many filmmakers come and they make films about Palestine, about the subject, and it's not just in Palestine, in different places, in different countries in the Middle East. But for me, it's more powerful and more strong, and you can change the people when you connect all of this, the filmmaking and the relation between you and the subject, and the from your feeling and your mind and your experience, it's very important to connect all of this and to make film. It will be more powerful, and you can reach the people and you can change the people by these new stories.
Because you are one of them rather than an outsider looking in.
Yeah, I'm one who lives there. I have my experience, and I live there from my feeling and my mind, and I feel how's the life there. And so important that people talk about their story, not just to make films. I mean, people who come to make films from outside, they didn't live really the reality and the life and the feeling and the mind. They are not connected to the situation and to the reality. So when you mix all of this, the filmmakings and the mind and the feeling and the relation between you and the subject and the land, it will be more powerful and more understood for people who live outside.
Let me tell people, I'm Terrence McNally. I'm speaking. The voice you're just hearing right now is Imad Bernat, and I am also joined by Guy Davidi. Imad is Palestinian, Davidi Israeli. They are the co-directors of the Academy Award-nominated documentary, Five Broken Cameras. And you can learn more at kinolorber.com. That's kinolorber.com/5broken cameras. You can also just Google Five Broken Cameras and find it, but it's available on DVD, Netflix, iTunes, Hulu, Amazon, and video on demand. This is Terrence McNally. You're listening to my 2013 interview with Palestinian Imad Bernat and Israeli Guy Davidi, co-directors of the Oscar-nominated documentary Five Broken Cameras. So one of the things that seems to work is that your son is born at the same time as the barrier begins being built. And so for a viewer, we see both, as you were pointing out, your personal life and this political reality all going on at the same time.
Yeah, it's more related to the life there, to the daily life in the village, related to my son and to my friends, to the situation in my village. So it's very important to cover and to capture these scenes and this situation. It's very long process since 2005, but it was very important that me and the guy meet, and we started to create and to get more ideas and to build the story. So because it's important that people from outside look on this and just to give them how they can understand more the story.
No, I will say this was for me the most on the ground, if you will, the most real perspective I'd ever gotten. And the fact that it's up for the Academy Award and now gets publicity is wonderful. You say early in the film, Imad, that each of your children has experienced a different childhood. Tell us about that.
Yeah, as me, as I have different experience all my life. I've been through many kind of experience all my life, hard experience and good experience, and so my kids, they've been through this also. First, my son Muhammad, he came like the situation was very least hard, and it's
less more hard.
Less hard.
It was more simple back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, it's more simple and more quiet. So he we have the access to the sea. So we has the access to the sea. So we could go with him to the sea and to different places, and then go back again to the village. But sometimes you feel that you live under the army control. There's many pressures and many, you feel that this experience was more to feel and to live that, to feel that you live in normal life
for your oldest son, for him,
yeah.
And the next son?
And the next time, yes, he came in the end of this experience of his brother experience, and he just came and. Everything was to be more difficult. So my third son, he came after the third son, and everything was exploded.
Right. So the second one sees the transition.
Yeah,
third one, as a young child, it's already gotten darker.
Yeah, he got in. I remember his first day when he was born in the hospital. I was in the hospital, and it was the second intifada in 2000. The second day of the second
intifada.
And I saw many people is getting killed. And
hospital for the birth.
Yeah,
and other people
are coming into the
hospital. Yeah, yes.
Many people is coming to the hospital. People are... It's very hard to see this these scenes. People is getting killed, and somebody is without half of his head, or so many difficult scenes in that day. So
at a day when otherwise you would be celebrating
happiness
of his birth.
So he came in very hard moments, very hard experience.
And so that's the third.
So it's everything was closed after that, and so he lives his experience in difficult situation.
He never has the experience his older brothers had.
Yeah, and then came Jibril. Jibril came is in more close to the situation, because his experience in the village was to start the struggle in the village and the construction, the wall. And so you see him growing up, and you see him like he just came to this world, and he just see the wall or soldiers, and he first talk about soldiers and the wall. So it was very hard to him to live this life also. And you know, children, they should go and live in different experience and the normal life. But our kids grow up in this experience. And
let me just say for listeners, Jibril, being your youngest son, it seems very attached to you.
Yes.
And comes with you a lot when you are shooting. And so we watch him go from an infant to... how old is he at the end? Six or
he's,
so?
He's now
He would be seven.
He's eight now.
And the film, you stopped shooting?
He's six in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I must say, in case I don't circle around back to it at the end, that you end the film with your two youngest sons going to the sea.
Yes.
And is that one of the first times for them?
Yeah, this is one of the first time they go and they see the sea, and you can see Jibril how he was scared, and he would just wanted to be far from the sea. And Jibril was very touched to me and very connected to me, and he wants to go everywhere. Wherever I go, he wants to go with me.
Yeah, I mean, so, but I hadn't realized that your own situation of not seeing the sea till you are 12.
Yeah, but they have, they are lucky. They have the chance to see the sea in this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they are lucky compared to other kids in the village.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm Terrence McNally. I'm speaking with the co-directors of Five Broken Cameras. It is nominated for, it is one of the five nominees for the best feature documentary this year at the Academy Awards, and it is co-directed by Imad Bernat, whose voice you just heard, the farmer and filmmaker who shot most of the film. And I'm also joined in the studio by Guy Davidi, a filmmaker who joined with Imad, and they co-direct the film. Let me go to you, back to you, Guy. What were you shooting when you, what were you working on when you came to Berlin and met Imad, and how did you meet, and how, let me put it this way. You end up with a well-constructed documentary nominated for Academy Award. What did you first hope you would do together?
Okay, so in 2005, after spending some weeks in Berlin supporting the people I wanted to make some short films dealing about the nonviolent movement, but I felt that this is actually very well documented. There are a lot of people who are doing films. There's a film that was released in 2006 called Berlin, My Love, by a friend of ours, an Israeli filmmaker. It's called Shai Carmeli Pollack. And because there were a lot of films, I kind of looked for different perspectives and finding new stories, the way to tell the same story, but in from an other points of view. So together with the Swiss director called Alexander Gutschmann, we started constructing stories. One story was a construction worker that was working in the settlement of Mardin Elite, and he was from the village.
Helping construct the settlement that destroys his village.
And the wall are built by Palestinians that are need some kind of income to survive. So they are stuck in that really difficult position where they have to find job and sometimes to nourish the occupation, but at the same time, they want to object to it, at least some of them. So that was a kind of a different perspective to look about the construction of the settlement. And then for my first feature-length documentary I made with Alexander, it's called Interrupted Streams, and that was a film about the water issue. And the water for me, not a lot of people are aware that Palestine's water are occupied by Israel, and most of the water they are supplying back to Israel or to the settlers. And Palestinians, they do get a lot of enough water to drink, but not enough to maintain any kind of industry or agriculture. So they're always above the humanitarian line, but they can never develop because there's not enough water to have agriculture. And when you don't cultivate the land, then it's easier to grab it also. So the water are connected to many things. And we felt that the water...
Let me just cut in right now. Is Interrupted Streams available?
Interrupted Streams was not released in the U.S. It was screened once.
So not online or... No. Okay.
No. I hope someone will pick it up. It's a beautiful film. But it was released internationally, but not so much in the U.S. And I think, for doing Interrupted Streams, I stayed in Berlin for a few months, 2.5 months in a row, which was a very strong thing to do, I think, because being an Israeli, 2005, coming to a village, staying in a village, speaking out with the people, hearing about their lives, about their childhood, about different experience that they had. I think this had a strong impact on me.
Let me just say one thing. As Imad pointed out, different from an outsider coming in and shooting by a villager adds something to it. And then as you're saying, your experience of just living there rather than just dropping in and out.
Of course, yeah. It was impossible to create a film together after if I didn't have this period of time of understanding what was happening from inside as much as someone from outside can, because of course I'm an Israeli filmmaker. There is a big, you know, it's a very difficult to understand what it means to live under occupation for 40 years. But as much as I could in these 2 months, I think I had a strong understanding of how people are influenced emotionally, mainly.
Yes,
and
yes.
How their life...
Right. So if not having the experience, at least you have the empathy.
And understanding also. Yeah. It's something that you can understand. During that time, most of the village, most of Berlin, the people, they know me. And I think because, for us, when Imad called me in to join his project, it was already ongoing. He was filming for many years. And at the beginning, I wasn't sure why to do another film about the subject that was mediatized. And also, it's very difficult for us to collaborate. Me being an Israeli, I will always be considered as an Israeli, even though, you know, I'm a part of a small minority of activists. There were not a lot. I'm not really representing Israelis. Most of Israelis, when they were hearing I went to the West Bank, they were sure I'd be massacred, I'll be killed. And they, you know, or they didn't look nicely at me. They look at me as a traitor sometimes. So you have to understand that I'm not presenting the average Israeli when I went to Berlin to live in the village or just to go to demonstration. So I think it was a very big challenge for Imad to offer me to join in the project because I will be here. You present me as an Israeli filmmaker, so this it becomes something political, and we can't avoid that. But I think the fact that I was connected to the village and people know me, and I was there, first of all, to support the people, that helps a lot because they understand that there is a real commitment to the movement and that I'm there doing the film with Imad to empower his voice, to give him space to speak out. When Imad called me in, I felt that... it's important that this film will be always his voice, that my role is there to help him shape the story, to connect the narratives, to do together, to construct the storytelling, you know, to give my talent. But he's going to be, it's his voice who should be empowered. And I think a lot of films that were done by Israeli or international people from outside, even if they're criticizing Israeli occupation, they are still dealing with themselves at the end, with their guilt, with their emotions, with their issues. So we're taking this issue, this important issue, and we're kind of hijacking it sometimes.
Well, I would say that in watching the film, it is, as I say, almost entirely shot by Imad, and it is your voice narrating with subtitles, and you are very much invisible.
Yes.
Intentionally.
It's a political decision. It's a cinematic decision. I thought that this is what's important for the film, but it's not an easy decision because I will always be misunderstood. No one will completely understand my role, and it's not a comfortable decision. But this is what was important for the film. This is something to respect Imad's work that risks his life, and his voice is much more needed than my voice. So it's a gift that I give to him.
Yeah. Let me.
And he gave to me, of course, for working with him.
Let me tell people again. I'm Terrence McNally, and I'm joined by Imad Bernat and Guy Dividi. They are the co-directors of the Academy Award-nominated documentary Five Broken Cameras. This is a free forum. Let me just make 2 points. We're around the halfway point. One is that, Guy, you have launched a campaign on Indiegogo to raise funds to bring Five Broken Cameras to Israeli youth. And if people go to Indiegogo, that's one word for those of you that it's new to, I-N-D-I-E, Indiegogo, Indiegogo.com, and search for Five Broken Cameras, you can contribute to this fundraising effort.
And there is a beautiful video that I made of documentation of a screening held in to Israeli youth, and the responses are really interesting, sometimes are shocking, sometimes are... You can really see how the film is shocking for Israeli audiences, and especially youth. These are kids before 3-4 years before joining the military service. So for me, this is the most precious audience. These are the people I hoped for that will watch the film the most.
Very good. So that's at Indiegogo.com. Look up Five Broken Cameras, and you're welcome to contribute to that fund. Okay, let's get into some of what happens in the film. I'm going to turn back to you, Imad. We meet a few people through your footage. Of course, we meet you. We meet your children, especially Jibril. We meet your wife. And we meet, let me mention three other people, your brother Khaled, and two friends of yours in the village, Phil and Adib Abu Rama. Tell us about the experience of those three, your brother and those two friends.
Yeah, the things that the struggle came to my village and the construction of the wall, that's mean people are more connected each to other. So we were connected more. So the resistance in the village and the...
Let me cut in 1 second to say that one thing that happened that becomes a center point of the film is demonstrations, nonviolent demonstrations every Friday against the building of the wall.
Yeah, so when people gathering after the prayer on Friday, and it was before in the beginning every day, so when people gather near the mosque and they just go together to demonstrate, so this gave you more to be together, more time to be together, and more time to be friends and families. We are big family in the village. We are we know each other, but it's more this events or this situation connected the people very strong to others.
And yeah, because so it really
builds. We are all of us. We are in the same battle. I want to say, and so I was. What's happens in the village was everything. What happens in the village was related to me and affected me and affected my friends and my family and my brothers and the people around me. So it's a story of life. So when you are connected to somebody, to Bassem, he was close to me and he just got killed. It's very shocking. And when you connect to Adib and he got arrested for 2 years, you got shocking. So when you are connected to your son, the relation between you and your son. It's the same thing, the relation between us and our land. So we love our land, and we love our I love my son, and I want to take care of him, and I want to make peace for him. So I don't want him to go through a bad experience in his life. So it's we had very strong relation between us, the friends and brothers and the people in the village. So we were all together in this protest or the action.
Let me make a couple of observations, if I may. One thing that is different than so many people, let's say, who live in Los Angeles, for instance, or even people in America, is the fact that families have lived in that village for generations, as we pointed out, not just your family, most of them. So this loving of the land is not from an American who moved. I moved 10 times, I think 6 times before I went to college, you know? And so was I tied to anything? You guys are, land is in your blood.
Yeah, I people ask me many times, are you still living in the same place? So it's for me, it's a strange question.
Yeah, exactly.
Why I should leave? I'm related to this place for many generations, and I live there. I'm connected to my land by my heart and my mind and my blood. So when you are connected to something, you love it and you take care of it like your son. But when you are not connected and you don't love it, you just leave it. You destroy it.
Yeah. And then Phil, who you introduce us to, he seems such a charismatic, you know, gregarious, full of life kind of person. I think even of McMurphy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, this kind of a character. That is a fair description of Phil?
Yeah, he is very special person in the village. He was very special person. He was a friend of everyone in the village, the friend of the kids.
The children loved him.
The children loved him, and he was playing always with the children. And wherever you move, you find him. He just moved like everywhere, and he never think about to build his future or to build a house or to get married. He just want to live his life helping people and fun, making fun for people. And this was everybody was shocked in the village, and not just in the village, around the village.
Because how was he killed?
He was in the action, in the demonstration, the Friday demonstrations, and after so the soldiers, they started to shoot tear gas and bullets, and he was talking to the soldiers, don't shoot. Why you are shooting? You just got some Israeli got hurt here. Stop shooting. And then he got shot in his chest. So
in his chest. Let me ask a question. Yeah. The first reaction, we see this over and over again. You're doing nonviolent demonstrations, confrontations. The soldiers try to push you back or stop the demonstrations. The first thing is usually tear gas, right? But and then do they use rubber bullets, or is it live ammunition, or is it sometimes one, sometimes the other? Was he was killed by live ammunition?
He was killed by gas canister.
A gas canister hit him in the chest
Hit him in the chest and it killed him. But this gas canister was made for demonstrations, for actions. It's more heavy and more fast. You cannot see him. It's not easy to see.
So you can't jump out of the way.
Yeah,
a lot of these weapons are very lethal, actually. If you're supposed to be
non-lethal,
but they're actually very lethal. If you shoot a rubber-coated, it's a rubber-coated, it's not just rubber bullet, and you shoot someone from the range of 20 meters or even 10 meters at the end, it can kill them. And there were a lot of people that got injured and that were killed because of rubber-coated bullet or because of gas canister. The story of Phil happened to an American activist just 2 weeks before Phil, that was in coma for many years and still suffering, a strong health issues, motorical issues because of the gas canister.
So they use rubber bullet and they use gas canister and they use many kind of new weapons that
so
they
not
made for.
So it is not live ammunition.
They use all for life ammunition.
They do.
Yeah, they lose. Some people be they been in shot by live ammunition.
Now your biggest health issue is when you have an accident in your truck and you run into the barrier. On the one hand, you say in the film that the barrier probably saved your life.
Yeah, you know, I always during the last 7 years I was very close many times to be killed. So for me, I my camera been shot many times, and one of my cameras I remember, it's remind me that this camera saved my life because this camera was
between you and the
between me and the soldiers, and it was close to me 30 meters, and he shot me direct to my face, two bullets. So the you can see the bullet is still in the lens of the camera. So I was very close to because so in the accidents happens because we used to go to the land and to go through the gate near the soldiers, and the road was destroyed, so the construction of the wall and the settlement, they just cut the road, so we used to go to the hill and very deep, and the tractor lost control, and I hit the fence by the tractor to stop the tractor.
So let me just make that clear. So on the one hand, the destruction of the road is what caused the accident. The barrier is what stopped you from going further. But you do spend 20 days in a coma.
I spent 20 days in the coma.
And you are rushed to Tel Aviv to a hospital.
Yeah.
Would that happen to anyone in your village?
No, I'm the first one.
And because of the guy, let me ask you, why is he taken? Why do you think, from your perspective, that he goes to Tel Aviv?
Because he was, I think, because he was the accident was under separation fence, meaning on there were soldiers around that coming to evacuate him. Then they could have pushed the soldiers to evacuate him to the other side and not. I think if the accident was 50 meters inside. Inside the village, then they would not take him to.
And as you say,
but I think the accident was on the road, on the fence, and the responsibility of the soldiers to take me to the Israeli side. But I was very lucky in that day because it was a woman, an Israeli woman, a soldiers. She decided to take me to Israeli hospital and. So I feel that I was lucky because many people were injured or were killed in checkpoint and they never been taken to Israel hospital. So it's more related to the woman who
the individual. It comes down to that every time, doesn't it? In other words, both of you before we went on the air said this is not political. As much as one is from Israel, one is from Palestine, it is human.
It's not political. It's not political. It's, even when I proposed him to support the project and to join me, it was not political. It was not political decision to make Israeli-Palestinian project. It was very clear.
Filmmaker.
Yeah, it's human friends, and it was very clear we are doing this. Our goal is to reach the people and to change the people and to change the situation, the Palestinian situation.
You've begun almost to do it, but let me do this. We've got basically 4 minutes more. I'm going to go to Guy and then back to you, Imad. Just kind of a closing. You've each got 2 minutes. The making of the film, the purpose of the film, the meaning of all of this to you, what you hope happens.
For me, this was also a kind of a spiritual process. And because I felt that I've seen a lot of films that were dealing about the subject, and many of the films are showing a lot of suffering happening to Palestinians, or sometimes films that deal with Israel also deals with the suffering in a way that is wallowing in the suffering, that is staying in the suffering, looking at, saying out, look, this is what they've done to us. They've done to us this and that and that. And then there is a tone that is a kind of accusing tone. And we tried in the film to have a very soft tone, a film that kind of shows, look, this is what was happening to me in my life. This is what I've experienced. And these are harsh, dramatic experiences, but the tone of the film is a very, it's a very respecting, is a very non-accusing, is not judgmental. So I think the last sentences that Imad is saying in the film is also the victim has a responsibility in life and it's to heal. And I think this is a punch in the belly for a lot of Israelis who like this competition of saying we suffered more in history, so because we suffered more, we have the right to do whatever we need because this is a jungle out there, and if you're not the strong, you're going to die. And this guy is coming and speaking to them and telling him, okay, I suffered in my life, but my intention is to heal. And he challenges Israelis, are you willing to heal? Are you willing to stop being the victims or the aggressors,
or the aggressor,
and move away from that cycle. So for me, this was, I think, what I hoped to bring out with this film.
I'm going to ask you a slightly different question, Imad. This may sound strange, given the occupation, the demonstrations, the settlements, and so on. But with all that I've read about the oppression of folks in the West Bank, let me confess that one of my responses to your film, and I think it's intentional, was a bit of surprise at how normal your family life was. Given all of that, there's a birthday party, there's a TV, there's a DVD, there's these things. I think one of the paradoxical values of your film is that it humanizes everyone. And I found your life, I'd always just thought oppressed, oppressed, oppressed. Yes, there's difficulty, but I also got the feeling these are just folks.
Yeah, it's not... You know, when I talk about my life and my family life and the what's going on in the village, what happens in the village, so you know I talk it as normal life. This is my normal life, the daily life. So we have hope, and our hope give us energy to just to continue our life and to find some time to make it normal life and to forget sometimes about the occupation and about the hard moments and the hard experience. So many hard situation in the West Bank and so many hard, if I talk about the village, but the village and if the film is not talking about what's going on in the West Bank, there's many hard situation and many people getting killed every day, and so it's very hard. It's not just showing the normal life in my village, just to remember that it's the life in the West Bank in different places, in different villages, is more hard and more difficult. So I wanted to show just my life, in the village, my family life, my friends. And for me, it's important my goal is to reach the people. And so I think the film was very successful, and to get in the Oscar with this story will draw big attention to the Palestinian issue. And I think it will be a historic day for the village and for the Palestinian and for Palestine to win the Oscar the first time.
Okay. Again, the film is Five Broken Cameras. To learn more, go to Kino Lorber, KinoLorber, KinoLorber.com, Five Broken Cameras. The film is available on DVD, Netflix, iTunes, Hulu, Amazon, and Video Demand, and as I said, nominated for the Best Documentary Film. You can listen to this week's conversation and many others anytime during the week by linking to the podcast. You can sign up to have it delivered to you weekly, either at iTunes or at my website. My website has two names, terrencemcnally.net, TerrenceMcNally, terrencemcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com. If you want to receive my weekly email announcement of upcoming guests and issues and three or four articles of background, you can sign up at my site or by emailing me at temcnally, T-E-M-C-N-A-L-L-Y, @mac.com. Again, Guy Dividi has launched a campaign on Indiegogo to raise funds to bring Five Broken Cameras to be viewed by Israeli youth. You can go to Indiegogo.com, search for Five Broken Cameras if you're interested in that. And I thank you both.
Thank you very much.
My thanks to Imad Bernat and Guy Davidi, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.